Good Tuesday morning. You're tuned in listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on Sujolo 6090 AM here inside of Montreal. This is episode 501. We continue this week with our Mission Impossible retrospective, MI2, and we are also going to be celebrating the anniversary review of A History of Violence from director David Cronenberg. We take a look at it, celebrating 20 years. Out for DVD Tuesday for June the 24th, you have Ironheart, which is a Disney Plus series, the Osgood Perkins film, The Monkey, arrives out onto physical release, based onto a Stephen King short story. You also have the live action of Snow White starring Gal Gadot and Rachel Zegler. That one arrives out onto a physical media release as well too, also streaming onto Disney Plus. We are going to get you started out here with some music, and since it is La Fête Nationale, we're going to hear some of my favorite artists. We're going to hear Philippe B with Calorifère, we're going to hear Ariane Moffat with Miami, and then finally a song selection from me, you're going to hear Bruce Springsteen with the track Nebraska. Given that the new biopicture trailer for the Bruce Springsteen film dropped last week, stars Jeremy Allen White, Deliver Me From Nowhere. We can expect it out inside of October, and I do believe that is going to be based upon the album Nebraska mainly. You are once again tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on CJLO 6090 AM here in Montreal.
Tu dis que t'as peur du bonheur, que les larmes dans tes yeux ne sont que ton vieux cœur qui fond. Mais si tu mouilles mon lit, moi je dis tant mieux. Quand il pleut, c'est un peu le printemps. Tant pis pour ceux qui préfèrent l'hiver. On va monter le calorifère, faire grimper la température. On va faire couler la chamelure, faire décoller la peinture. Laisse tes larmes tomber sur le calorifère. Le calorifère. Tu pleures, tu dis que janvier ça t'écœure. Y'a des arbres de Noël, des poubelles, puis fait noir à 4 heures. Mais quand s'étire la nuit, moi je dis tant mieux. Y'a un feu qui brûle dans nos ventres et remplit nos yeux de copeaux de lumière. Monter le calorifère, faire grimper la température. On va faire couler la chambre, faire décoller la peinture. Laisse tes larmes tomber sur le calorifère. Calorifère. So we're standing on her front lawn, just a twirling her baton. Me and her went for a ride in ten innocent people down from the town of Lincoln, Nebraska, with a sawed-off 410 on my lap, through the badlands of Wyoming, I killed everything in my path. Can't say that I'm sorry for the things that we've done, at least for a little while, sir. Me and her, we had us some fun. Now the jury brought in a guilty verdict, and the judge sentenced me to death. Midnight in prison storeroom, the leather straps across my chest. Sheriff, when the man pulls that switch, sir, and snaps my poor head back, you make sure my pretty baby sitting right there on my lap. They declared me unfit to live, said into that great void my soul be hurled. They wanted to know why I did what I did. Well, sir, I guess it's just a meanness in this world.
Mr. Hunt, the next time you go on holiday, please be good enough to let us know where you're going.
This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
If I let you know where I'm going, I won't be on holiday.
On this week's episode for our Mission Impossible retrospective, we take a look at Mission Impossible 2 from director John Woo. So inside of this installment, Ethan Hunt is going up against a former colleague from the CIA, all in all to stop a viral threat of the virus Chimera. Alongside for the ride would be Naya, starring as Tandy, Naya as Tandy Newton, and Vigrams is back as well too as Luther. So this one is directed by John Woo, which I think that we can talk immediately about the criteria that we're talking about this retrospective. We talk about the director's vision to the project, which I think that Woo brings his own signature style to the Mission Impossible series, which I think that I truly appreciate. So his signature style of the slow cameras, like the slow moving cameras or the slow motion to the action sequences as well too. It gets more visceral too with the action sequences too. A lot more hand-to-hand combats.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I was gonna mention that, as a matter of fact, John Woo's style of directing compared to Brian De Palma's style of directing. What John Woo did was more of his camera work was like up close, where you were, which I think was a good thing. It was a good way of capturing the emotions of the characters within the film.
So I guess that we can now talk about the main villain or the baddie of the series. That would be Sean
Sean Ambrose.
Ambrose from actor Duggery Scott. So what did you think about him as a villain?
I thought he was very diabolical, so to speak. What was special about him is that he was very evil, but at the same time, he came off as charming.
True, I mean, he has to be if he wants to court Naya along for the ride. What I think that I truly appreciated too from this series is that it goes a throwback to the original Mission Impossibles, as well as Brian De Palma's Mission Impossible, where you have the face masks as well too, which you don't know who's behind the mask from time to time. Plays really well if you haven't seen the film originally.
Well, that's that in itself, the characters disguising as some other characters within the film, it gets to be confusing at some point or another. But that's the idea, though. It's the director, whoever that may be, is purposely trying to screw with the minds of the viewers.
So we talk about Ethan's friends here at the IMF, including his relationship with Tandy Newton's Naya. This time around, I reviewed it and I rewatched it, and it was a little bit cliche for me. I'm not gonna lie. The romance between them, a little bit cliche, I've found.
Well, I disagree with that. I found there was a lot of chemistry between them.
As well too, Ving Rhames, I don't know, Luther this time around. I don't know if he's doing type of advertisements for Gucci and Versace, but yeah, he keeps on complaining every time that he puts something on or that he's destroying his Versace boots or his Gucci jacket or something. Very
That was,
funny.
I think the jacket was Versace.
Versace.
No, but I noticed that myself. It was funny. Just, oh man, I messed up my Versace jacket.
So I don't know if it's like a trademark for Versace or whatever. We get now to the Mission Impossible question mark. Was it truly a Mission Impossible for Ethan Hunt this time around? What makes it exceptionally impossible? I mean, just getting into the building where the Chimera is held, you see that he has to like rappel in, which is probably one of the iconic scenes from the film. Also, the trademark with the signature motorcycle chases at the very end, another trademark, I would say, of the Mission Impossible 2. Alongside that, the Hans Zimmer's score for the film makes that iconic as well too.
Well, once again, we saw Ethan Hunt hanging by the ceiling, and in the end, there was the fast-paced vehicles. In the first one, there was the train. This time, it was the motorcycles, which is it was interesting.
And it makes the camera choices a lot more interesting too, rather than just having the train, like the motorcycles going and zooming everywhere, that the camera has to keep up with that, and John Woo has to keep up with that as well too. So that's probably what makes it interesting. We get to our final thoughts of Mission Impossible 2 right now. My final thought about the film itself is that I truly appreciate this Mission Impossible 2 as it stands. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I truly appreciate it, probably because this was my first Mission Impossible from the Mission Impossible series that I viewed. That's what I truly enjoy about it. I enjoy Woo's directing trademarks the most, probably from the film, including the hand-to-hand combat and the slow motion camera work that he does with the film. That's what makes it the most interesting for me for this outing for Ethan Hunt. The relationship between Naya and Ethan, I feel a lot to be discussed there, maybe. I know you appreciated it, but I feel the more that I watch it, maybe I don't appreciate it as much, but I truly appreciate the action that John Woo brings and his directing style that he brings to this one.
Well, I most certainly agree with John Woo, with your thoughts on John Woo's style. I thought it was a very interesting film. It had a great story, a story of world domination. But
Also, redemption for certain characters like Naya.
yeah, world domination was a theme in the film. There was redemption with Naya. And you said last time that I would have more of an appreciation for Tom Cruise's performance of Ethan Hunt's the portrayal of Ethan Hunt in this film. And you know what? You're right. This time around, I thought that Tom Cruise did a better job. He I don't know He just seemed more confident as Ethan Hunt within this film than he did in the last film.
No, you feel that as the Mission Impossible series progresses as well too. So yeah, up next for our Mission Impossible retrospective, we take a look at Mission Impossible 3 from director J.J. Abrams. That one will be coming out very soon. I think that we'll get through one more Mission Impossible, so Mission Impossible 3, before we take a little bit of a break with the retrospective. So, if you've been following along, we've gone through Mission Impossible 1, Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 3, probably going to get through Dead Reckoning Part 1 or another one, and then we'll get to our final Mission Impossible from the Mission Impossible retrospective. Once again, thank you to Omar Sonics for donating to last year's funding drive for CJLO 1690 AM in the name of At the Movies, and saying that we should be doing a Mission Impossible retrospective, and it's only fitting since the last Mission Impossible series is now inside of theaters. So, once again, thank you, Omar, for your support for CJLO 1690 AM.
Some people look at Sonny Hayes. They see a guy who lives in a van, a gambling junkie who missed his shot, the best that never was. But I see possibility. And if you don't love me now, we'll never love. My rook is a phenomenal talent, but he's young. You plus him, boom, I got a team.
When was the last time you won a race?
Sunday, Daytona.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Formula One.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then same as you.
A little bit of the trailer for F1 there. One of the films celebrating its release this Friday, the 26th of June, for the final Friday inside June. You also have Megan 2.0. That one arrives out inside theaters this Friday as well too. F1 stars Brad Pitt, Javier Bardem as well too. So those are the two films coming out to theaters this Friday for Cinematic Fridays for June 26th. Once again, I will remind you, you're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on Cigello 6090 AM here in Montreal. Now Danny joins me for an anniversary review of A History of Violence from director David Cronenberg, celebrating 20 years. On this week's episode for La Fête Nationale and Canada Day coming up very soon, Danny and I decided upon revisiting an anniversary review of Canadian director David Cronenberg's A History of Violence from 2005. It was released. So it is about, well, I will say that it's based onto a graphic novel by the same title, John Wagner and Vince Locke. It is about a diner owner. Inside the film, he was portrayed by Viggo Mortensen, and he becomes a local hero after he foils an attempted robbery, but has to face his past enemies to protect his family. And in doing so, he becomes the hero, but it's like the type of hero thing where you go onto TV and then a bunch of people come out of the woodwork after him, after that.
Well, precisely. Well, after he killed those criminals that came to his diner, he did it out of self-defense, of course. After he did that, it was all over the media. But what became obvious is that he didn't want the attention. And afterwards, you realized why he didn't want the attention.
No, exactly. I guess that we can go to the first plot of the film. So the film opens up with the two criminals that did end up coming to the diner, and they commit an act of violence at the most recent motel that they've been staying at. And then after that, they hit the road. So we see right away from the film that it's going to be a violent film. For me, this is one of Cronenberg's films that is easy and accessible in terms of thematics, I will say. And that's what I appreciate the most about it. It isn't a far-fetched idea or a far-fetched concept. I mean, violence is in nature inside of all of us, and how we control it and how we use it for good or for bad. Some people use it for bad, some people use it for good. But then you have the morality clause of, is it good inside of any sense, inside of the good ways that we use it or inside the bad ways that we use it as well too, I would say. So the film premiered in competition for the Palme d'Or at the 2005 Cannes Film Festival. And then I think that we can talk about this right now, because I studied this a little bit inside of my CJEP course about the idea of the double or having a dual identity. And definitely I would say that Tom, the owner of the diner, has a dual identity. He's Tom the family man to his family, but he's known to other people as Joey Cusack, even though he tries to hide Joey Cusack. His dual identity is slipping from him. And it does slip when the diner altercation happens.
Yeah, precisely, because Tom Stahl is somebody who appears to be a mild-mannered person, somebody who owns and runs a business and is also a family man, has a wife and two children. So the question after that is, how was he able to defend himself from those trained criminals so well?
Precisely is it inside of his nature. Now let's go for the nature nurture debate here, because Tom or Joey's violence is inside of his son as well too, because his son gets fed up with the bullies at school at a certain point and lashes out inside of a violent nature against the bullies, but he's not better than the bullies, but he was defending himself just like his father was defending himself against the criminals. So here we go. Like, was in fact the violence used for good means, even though violence inside society has no place or justification? Maybe inside the self-defense clause, and that would be it.
Well, Tom's son Jack, the guy that was bullying Jack's bully was somebody who was harboring a great deal of jealousy towards Jack, because Jack helped his team win the baseball game, and afterwards, Jack's bully was jealous of his father for how he defended himself against those criminals at the diner.
That's a fair point as well too. So, basically it's the Ed Harris character and Ed Harris's goons that come out of the woodwork to visit Tom or Joey, and they keep on like saying like, "No, your name's Joey, like it's you, Joey," and they keep on insisting of it, and they start stalking his family too, with his wife at the mall as well too. And then finally everything comes to head to head when the criminals get the upper hand, and essentially they give like Joey or Tom an ultimatum, and Tom decides to take matters inside of his own hands, and he has to confront his criminal past and his brother, and they go back to he goes back to Philadelphia. The family inside of Essence distances and isolates themselves when the It's revealed that Tom has a criminal past and he's Joey Cusack. And then he basically, we can issue a spoiler alert, but he goes back to meet his brother, played by William Hurt, I do believe. And
William Hurt, correct.
basically they have a final confrontation. I mean, talk about brotherly love, that the brothers are supposed to support each other, but William Hurt's character feels that Joey is a loose cannon, and instead of accepting or helping his brother or taking his brother's word that he's going to solve everything, he decides that he's going to end Joey's life. Doesn't really go as planned, though, as we said with the spoiler alert.
Well, with Joey's brother Richie, who's living in this humongous mansion,
Yeah, I
he's
will.
still
If you don't
and
mind.
is obviously living well. He still blames his brother for money he lost because of Joey's altercation in the past with Carl Fogarty. It was Joey who was responsible for physically dis for disfiguring Fogarty. And apparently, that somehow cost Richie a lot of money, and it cost him a promotion in the mob world.
So the climactic landmark there that you were talking about would be the Enton Hall. It would be the iconic location where the climactic scene was shown. And as well too, A History of Violence was shot around Millbrook, Ontario. So yeah, then he returns back to his family, and it turns out that his family's like waiting for him at the dinner table. They open him with open arms and they're like having a communal meal all together. And then the film ends. So that's how
There
the
was
film ends.
mixed emotion, I feel, with his family in the end. On the one hand, they appeared to be happy to have him back, but on the other hand, They were just, they felt kind of frightened knowing his past.
True. So I guess then when we come back, we'll discuss more onto a history of violence all these years later. You're tuning in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds Only Heard on CJLO 6090 AM here inside of Montreal.
Give me some coffee. Make it black.
Yes, sir.
Joey.
It's Joey.
You are.
My name's Tom, sir.
Of course it is. It's good coffee.
Thank you, sir.
Hard to find coffee that's good in Philadelphia. But you know that, don't you, Tom?
No, actually I don't. I've never been to Philadelphia. Pennsylvania? Is that where you gentlemen are from?
Yeah, like you don't know.
Sir, do you think we know each other?
You tell me.
A clip from A History of Violence opens us back up to our anniversary review of the film celebrating its 20th anniversary from 2005, directed by Canadian director David Cronenberg. And what I can say going back inside this review, Danny, is that I truly appreciated this film because I feel that out of all of the David Cronenberg films that I've seen, this one is the most simplistic to understand. The thematics about violence and how anger begets anger, maybe, but how violence comes out and it's inside of nature, inside of all of us. And I can point to another film that most recently came out this year called The Shrouds from 2025, directed by David Cronenberg. And that film, too, I truly appreciated, too, just because it goes back to Cronenberg embracing his roots about how he's dealing with grief and loss and tragedy, but inside of the most Cronenberg way, which we understand that. So that's what I think I truly appreciate about The Shrouds. But enough about The Shrouds, let's talk about History of Violence all these years later. So let's go to Roger Ebert for a second when speaking about the legacy of A History of Violence, because Roger Ebert said that A History of Violence suggests a few things. It can suggest a subject with a long history of violence. It can also be historical use to settle disputes as a means of violence, which we see that inside of the film, both with the son Jack and with Tom or Joey. And then it goes back to Darwinism and survival of the fittest as well too, which is another case for the thematics of A History of Violence being the title of the film.
Well, you had mentioned before how the violent scenes of the film are graphic and some that might not sit well with certain viewers, but I feel it was necessary because the character Tom, Viggo Mortensen's character, is a good example of what somebody with advanced training in combat is capable of.
Not only that, but the source material for this is based onto a graphic novel, and graphic novels are normally dark, very atmospheric, and don't shy away from like the grittiness or the seediness of whatever the subject matter is. And inside of this one, it's plain spelled out to you. It's called A History of Violence. So the violence is going to be realistic. It's going to be gritty. It's going to have a sense of like atmospheric. So definitely in parallels with the graphic novel. That's why I think that the violence is done inside such a way to situate so that the audience gets like an atmospheric sense of the violence inside of that. The legacy of the film all of these years later, some consider this film as one of the best films from the 2000s. It's praised for the performances, screenwriting, and the atmosphere, and I can definitely praise it for all of those things. Here's an interesting fact. A History of Violence from 2005 is one of the last major Hollywood VHS tapes that came out. And then we would see, this isn't the first time that Cronenberg's dealt with like a criminal story or the criminal underworld, because we would see that criminal underworld once again inside of London, inside of its 2007 film, Eastern Promises, also starring Viggo Mortensen, but this time Viggo Mortensen is this Russian mobster figure living inside of London. So, like, I question this because, yes, Tom does return back to his family, but then inside of this one, inside 2007, you see Viggo Mortensen playing another mafia figure, this time the Russian mafia figure, inside of London. So you kind of question the parallels between both of those two films. If, like, could it be that maybe both of these two worlds correlate inside of some ways? Or do they not correlate at all? Which maybe if we ever get into Eastern Promises, we can talk about that a little bit more when it receives an anniversary review, possibly inside 2 years, when it celebrates its anniversary review of 20 years. So I'm going to leave it to you for the final thoughts and discussions about A History of Violence all these years later.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I found the acting was really good from all the actors, actually. Viggo Mortensen especially. Viggo Mortensen was a character who was his character in the film was a dualistic character. I mean, it was and he pulled that off well. It was almost like a Clark Kent Superman type ordeal, only in this case Superman would have a criminal past. And I feel Viggo Mortensen pulled that off well. So yeah, interesting story, really good acting. The effects were graphic, but I felt, like I said before, I feel was necessary. So yeah, overall, it's receiving a thumbs up on my end.
All of these years later, it's receiving a thumbs up on my end as well too. A great film from David Cronenberg there. A History of Violence is now on to stars and other platforms as well too. The Shrouds, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out. It's one of my favorite films of the year from director David Cronenberg. And well, on to next week's episode. I am thinking about maybe revisiting our ongoing playlist as heard at the movies or on TV. So that'll be on to next week's show. Thank you for joining me for this anniversary review, Danny.
And thank you for having me, Rami. It's always a pleasure.
And just so that our audience can follow along, our next anniversary review will be around One World Week, where Danny and I will be looking at Matthew Cassel's La Haine, all of these years later.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet, they'll cast their golden crowns when the man comes around. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down. When the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured a hundredweight and penny pound, when the man comes around.
Four beasts, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.